Chapter 9. He had heard all. All. He did not actually enter the room, but stood at the door, pale with excitement and fury. Zena looked at him in amazement. "So that's the sort of person you are," he cried, panting. "At last I have found you out, have I?"
"Found me out?" repeated Zena, looking at him as though he were a madman.
Suddenly her eyes flashed with rage.
"How dare you address me like that?" she cried, advancing towards him.
"I have heard all," said Mozgliakov solemnly, but involuntarily taking a step backwards.
"You heard? I see. You have been eavesdropping," cried Zena, looking at him with disdain. "Yes, I have been eavesdropping. Yes, I consented to do a mean action, and my reward is that I have found out that you, too, are... I don't know how to express to you what I think of you," he replied, looking more and more timid under Zena's eyes.
"And supposing that you have heard all, what right have you to blame me? What right have you to speak to me so insolently in any case?"
I? What right have I, and you can ask me this? You are going to marry this prince, and I have no right to say a word. Why, you gave me your promise. Is that nothing?
When?
How? When?
Did I not tell you that morning, when you came to me with your sentimental nonsense, did I not tell you that I could give you no decided answer?
But you did not reject me. You did not send me away.
I see. You kept me hanging in reserve in case of need. You lured me into your net. I see. I see it all.
An expression of pain flitted over Zena's careworn face, as though someone had suddenly stabbed her to the heart. But she mastered her feelings.
If I didn't turn you out of the house... she began deliberately and very clearly, though her voice had a scarcely perceptible tremor in it. "I refrained from such a course purely out of pity. You begged me yourself to postpone, to give you time, not to say you no, to study you better, and then, you said, then, when you know what a fine fellow I am, perhaps you will not refuse me." "These were your own words, or very like them, at the very beginning of your courtship. You cannot deny them. And now you dare to tell me that I lured you into my net, just as though you did not notice my expression of loathing when you made your appearance this morning? You came a fortnight sooner than I expected you, and I did not hide my disgust. On the contrary, I made it evident, you must have noticed it, I know you did, because you asked me whether I was angry because you had come sooner than you promised. Let me tell you that people who do not, and do not care to, hide their loathing for a man can hardly be accused of luring that man into their net. You dare to tell me that I was keeping you in reserve? Very well. My answer to that is that I judged of you like this. Though he may not be endowed with much intellect, still he may turn out to be a good enough fellow, and if so, it might be possible to marry him. However, being persuaded now that you are a fool, and a mischievous fool into the bargain, having found out this fact, to my great joy, it only remains for me now to wish you every happiness and a pleasant journey. Goodbye.
With these words, Zena turned her back on him and deliberately made for the door. Mozgliakov, seeing that all was lost, boiled over with fury.
"Oh, so I'm a fool?" he yelled. "I'm a fool, am I? Very well. Goodbye. But before I go, the whole town shall know of this.
They shall all hear how you and your mother made the old man drunk and then swindled him. I shall let the whole world know it. You shall see what Mozgliakov can do."
Zina trembled and stopped, as though to answer. But on reflection, she contented herself by shrugging her shoulders, glanced contemptuously at Mozgliakov, and left the room, banging the door after her. At this moment, Maria Alexandrovna made her appearance. She heard Mozgliakov's exclamation, and, divining at once what had happened, trembled with terror. Mozgliakov still in the house, and near the prince. Mozgliakov about to spread the news all over the town. At this moment, when secrecy, if only for a short time, was essential. But Maria Alexandrovna was quick at calculations. She thought, with an eagle flight of the mind, over all the circumstances of the case, and her plan for the pacification of Mozgliakov was ready in an instant. "What is it, mon ami?" she said, entering the room, and holding out her hand to him with friendly warmth.
"How, mon ami?" cried the enraged Mozgliakov. "Mon ami, indeed! The moment after you have abused and reviled me like a pickpocket. No, no, not quite so green, my good lady. I'm not to be so easily imposed upon again."
"I am sorry, extremely sorry to see you in such a strange condition of mind, Paul Alexandrovitch. What expressions you use! You do not take the trouble to choose your words before ladies. Oh, fie!
Before ladies? Oh, you are anything you like, but not a lady!" yelled Mozgliakov.
I don't quite know what he meant, but it was something very terrible, you may be sure. Maria Alexandrovna looked benignly in his face.
"Sit down," she said sorrowfully, showing him a chair, the same that the old prince had reclined in a quarter of an hour before.
"But listen, will you listen, Maria Alexandrovna? You look at me just as though you were not the least to blame, in fact, as though I were the guilty party. Really, Maria Alexandrovna, this is a little too much of a good thing. No human being can stand that sort of thing, Maria Alexandrovna. You must be aware of that fact."
"My dear friend," replied Maria Alexandrovna, "you will allow me to continue to call you by that name, for you have no better friend than I am. My friend, you are suffering. You are amazed and bewildered. Your heart is sore, and therefore the tone of your remarks to me is perhaps not surprising. But I have made up my mind to open my heart to you, especially as I am, perhaps, in some degree to blame before you. Sit down. Let us talk it over."
Maria Alexandrovna's voice was tender to a sickly extent. Her face showed the pain she was suffering. The amazed Mozgliakov sat down beside her in the armchair.
"You hid somewhere and listened, I suppose?" she began, looking reproachfully into his face.
"Yes, I did. Of course I did. And a good thing, too. What a fool I should have looked if I hadn't. At all events, now I know what you have been plotting against me,"
replied the injured man rudely, encouraging and supporting himself by his own fury.
"And you, with your principles, and with your bringing up, could condescend to such an action? Oh, oh!"
Mozgliakov jumped up.
"Maria Alexandrovna, this is a little too much!" he cried. "Consider what you condescend to do with your principles, and then judge of other people!"
"One more question," she continued, without replying to his outburst.
Who recommended you to be an eavesdropper? Who told you anything? Who is the spy here? That's what I wish to know.
No, excuse me, that I shall not tell you.
Very well. I know already. I said, Paul, that I was in some degree to blame before you. But if you look into the matter, you will find that if I am to blame, it is solely in consequence of my anxiety to do you a good turn.
What? A good turn? Me? No, madam, I assure you I am not to be caught again. I am not quite such a fool.
He moved so violently in his armchair that it shook again. Now, do be cool, if you can, my good friend. Listen to me attentively, and you will find that what I say is only the bare truth. In the first place, I was anxious to inform you of all that has just taken place, in which case you would have learned everything, down to the smallest detail, without being obliged to descend to eavesdropping. If I did not tell you all before, it was simply because the whole matter was in an embryo condition in my mind. It was then quite possible that what has happened would never happen. You see, I am quite open with you. In the second place, do not blame my daughter. She loves you to distraction, and it was only by the exercise of my utmost influence that I persuaded her to drop you and accept the prince's offer.
I have just had the pleasure of receiving convincing proof of her love to distraction, remarked Mozgliakov, ironically and bitterly.
Very well. But how did you speak to her? As a lover should speak? Again, ought any man of respectable position and tone to speak like that? You insulted and wounded her.
Never mind about my tone now. All I can say is that this morning, when I went away with the prince, in spite of both of you having been as sweet as honey to me before, you reviled me behind my back like a pickpocket. I know all about it, you see.
Yes, from the same dirty source, I suppose, said Maria Alexandrovna, smiling disdainfully. Yes, Paul, I did revile you. I pitched into you considerably, and I admit it frankly. But it was simply that I was bound to blacken you before her. Why? Because, as I have said, I required her to consent to leave you, and this consent was so difficult to tear from her. Short-sighted man that you are! If she had not loved you, why should I have required so to blacken your character? Why should I have been obliged to take this extreme step? Oh, you don't know all. I was forced to use my fullest maternal authority in order to erase you from her heart. And with all my influence and skill, I only succeeded in erasing your dear image superficially and partially. If you saw and heard all just now, it cannot have escaped you that Zina did not once, by either word or gesture, encourage or confirm my words to the prince. Throughout the whole scene she said not one word. She sang, but like an automaton. Her whole soul was in anguish, and at last, out of pity for her, I took the prince away. I am sure she cried when I left her alone. When you entered the room, you must have observed tears in her eyes.
Mozgliakov certainly did recall the fact that when he rushed into the room, Zina was crying.
But you, why were you so against me, Maria Alexandrovna? He cried. Why did you revile me and malign me, as you admit you did?
Ah, now that's quite a different question. Now, if you had only asked me reasonably at the beginning, you should have had your answer long ago. Yes, you are right. It was I, and I alone, who did it all. Do not think of Zena in the matter. Now, why did I do it? I reply, in the first place, for Zena's sake. The prince is rich, influential, has great connections, and in marrying him, Zena will make a brilliant match. Very well. Then, if the prince dies, as perhaps he will die soon, for we are all mortal, Zena is still young, a widow, a princess, and probably very rich. Then she can marry whom she pleases. She may make another brilliant match if she likes, but of course she will marry the man she loves, and loved before, the man whose heart she wounded by accepting the prince. Remorse alone would be enough to make her marry the man whom she had loved and so deeply injured.
"Hmm," said Paul, gazing at his boots thoughtfully.
"In the second place," continued Maria, "and I will put this shortly, because though you read a great deal of your beloved Shakespeare and extract his finest thoughts and ideals, yet you are very young and cannot perhaps apply what you read. You may not understand my feelings in this matter. Listen, however. I am giving my Zena to this prince, partly for the prince's own sake, because I wish to save him by this marriage. We are old friends. He is the dearest and best of men. He is a knightly, chivalrous gentleman, and he lives helpless and miserable in the claws of that devil of a woman at Donchanovo. Heaven knows that I persuaded Zena into this marriage by putting it to her that she would be performing a great and noble action. I represented her as being the stay and the comfort and the darling and the idol of a poor old man who probably would not live another year at the most. I showed her that thus his last days should be made happy with love and light and friendship, instead of wretched with fear and the society of a detestable woman. Oh, do not blame Zena. She is guiltless. I am not, I admit it, for if there have been calculations, it is I who have made them. But I calculate it for her, Paul, for her, not myself. Oh, I have outlived my time. I have thought but for my child. And what mother could blame me for this?"
Tears sparkled in the fond mother's eyes. Mozgliakov listened in amazement to all this eloquence, winking his eyes in bewilderment.
"Yes, yes, of course. You talk well, Maria Alexandrovna, but you forget. You gave me your word. You encouraged me. You gave me my hopes. And where am I now? I have to stand aside and look a fool."
"But my dear Paul, you don't surely suppose that I have not thought of you, too? Don't you see the huge, immeasurable gain to yourself in all this? A gain so vast that I was bound in your interest to act as I did."
"Gain for me? How so?"
asked Paul, in the most abject state of confusion and bewilderment.
"Gracious heavens! Do you mean to say you are really so simple and so short-sighted as to be unable to see that?" cried Maria Alexandrovna, raising her eyes to the ceiling in a pious manner.
"Oh, youth, youth! That's what comes of steeping one's soul in Shakespeare. You ask me, my dear friend Paul, where is the gain to you in all this? Allow me to make a little digression. Zina loves you. That is an undoubted fact. But I have observed that at the same time, and in spite of her evident love, she is not quite sure of your good feeling and devotion to her. And for this reason, she is sometimes cold and self-restrained in your presence. Have you never observed this yourself, Paul?"
"Certainly, I did this very day. But go on, what do you deduce from that fact?"
"There, you see, you have observed it yourself. Then, of course, I am right. She is not quite sure of the lasting quality of your feeling for her. I am a mother, and I may be permitted to read the heart of my child. Now, then, supposing that instead of rushing into the room and reproaching, vilifying, even swearing at and insulting this sweet, pure, beautiful, proud being, instead of hurling contempt and vituperation at her head, supposing that instead of all this you had received the bad news with composure, with tears of grief, maybe, perhaps even with despair, but at the same time with noble composure of soul. No, don't interrupt me. I wish to show you the picture as it is. Very well. Supposing, then, that you had come to her and said, 'Zina, I love you better than my life, but family considerations must separate us. I understand these considerations. They are devised for your greater happiness, and I dare not oppose them. Zina, I forgive you. Be happy if you can.' Think what effect such noble words would have wrought upon her heart."
"Yes, yes, that's all very true. I quite understand that much. But if I had said all this, I should have had to go all the same, without satisfaction."
"No, no, no, don't interrupt me. I wish to show you the whole picture in all its detail, in order to impress you fully and satisfactorily. Very well, then. Imagine now that you meet her in society some time afterwards. You meet, perhaps, at a ball, in the brilliant light of a ballroom, under the soothing strains of music, and in the midst of worldly women and of all that is gay and beautiful. You alone are sad, thoughtful, pale. You lean against some pillar, where you are visible, however, and watch her. She is dancing. You hear the strains of Strauss, and the wit and merriment around you, but you are sad and wretched. What think you will Zina make of it? With what sort of eyes will she gaze on you as you stand there? And I could doubt this man, she will think, this man who sacrificed all for my sake, even to the mortal wounding of his heart. Of course the old love will awake in her bosom and will swell with irresistible power."
Maria Alexandrovna stopped to take breath. Paul moved violently from side to side of his chair.
"Zina now goes abroad for the benefit of the prince's health, to Italy, to Spain," she continued, "where the myrtle and the lemon tree grow,
where the sky is so blue, the beautiful Guadalquivir flows, to the land of love, where none can live without loving, where roses and kisses, so to speak, breathe in the very air around. You follow her. You sacrifice your business, friends, everything, and follow her, and so your love grows and increases with irresistible might. Of course, that love is irreproachable, innocent. You will languish for one another. You will meet frequently. Of course, others will malign and vilify you both and call your love by baser names, but your love is innocent, as I have purposely said. I am her mother. It is not for me to teach you evil, but good. At all events, the prince is not in the condition to keep a very sharp lookout upon you, but if he did, as if there would be the slightest ground for base suspicion. Well, the prince dies at last, and then who will marry Zina if not yourself? You are so distant a relative of the prince's that there could be no obstacle to the match. You marry her. She is young still, and rich. You are a grandee in an instant. You too are rich now. I will take care that the prince's will is made as it should be. And lastly, Zina, now convinced of your loyalty and faithfulness, will look on you hereafter as her hero, as her paragon of virtue and self-sacrifice. Oh, you must be blind, blind, not to observe and calculate your own profit when it lies but a couple of strides from you, grinning at you, as it were, and saying, "Here I am yours, take me, O Paul, Paul!" "Maria Alexandrovna," cried Mozgliakov in great agitation and excitement, "I see it all. I have been rude, and a fool, and a scoundrel, too." He jumped up from his chair and tore his hair. "Yes, and unbusinesslike, that's the chief thing. Unbusinesslike, and blindly so," added Maria Alexandrovna. "I'm an ass, Maria Alexandrovna," he cried in despair. "All is lost now, and I loved her to madness."
"Maybe all is not lost yet," said this successful orator softly, and as though thinking out some idea.
"Oh, if only it could be so. Help me, teach me, oh, save me, save me!"
Mozgliakov burst into tears.
"My dear boy," said Maria Alexandrovna sympathetically, and holding out her hand, "you acted impulsively, from the depth and heat of your passion, in fact, out of your great love for her. You were in despair. You had forgotten yourself. She must understand all that.
Oh, I love her madly. I am ready to sacrifice everything for her,"
cried Mozgliakov.
"Listen, I will justify you before her."
"Oh, Maria Alexandrovna!"
"Yes, I will. I take it upon myself. You come with me, and you shall tell her exactly what I said."
"Oh, how kind! How kind you are! Can't we go at once, Maria Alexandrovna?"
"Good gracious, no! Oh, what a very green hand you are, Paul. She's far too proud. She would take it as a new rudeness and impertinence. Tomorrow I shall arrange it all comfortably for you. But now, couldn't you get out of the way somewhere for a while? To that godfather of yours, for instance? You could come back in the evening if you pleased,
but my advice would be to stay away.
Yes, yes, I'll go, of course. Oh, good heavens, you've made a man of me again. Well, but look here, one more question. What if the prince does not die so soon?
Oh, my dear boy, how delightfully naive you are. On the contrary, we must pray for his good health. We must wish with all our hearts for long life to this dear, good, and chivalrous old man. I shall be the first to pray day and night for the happiness of my beloved daughter. Ah, oh, but alas, I fear the prince's case is hopeless. You see, they must visit the capital now to bring Zena out into society. I dreadfully fear that all this may prove fatal to him. However, we'll pray, Paul. We can't do more, and the rest is in the hands of a kind providence. You see what I mean? Very well. Goodbye, my dear boy. Bless you. Be a man and wait patiently. Be a man. That's the chief thing. I never doubted your generosity of character, but be brave. Goodbye.
She pressed his hand warmly, and Mozgliakov walked out of the room on tiptoes.
There goes one fool got rid of satisfactorily, observed Maria Alexandrovna to herself. But there are more behind.
At this moment, the door opened, and Zena entered the room. She was paler than usual, and her eyes were all ablaze.
"Mama," she said, "be quick about this business, or I shall not be able to hold out. It is all so dirty and mean that I feel I must run out of the house if it goes on. Don't drive me to desperation. I warn you, don't weary me out. Don't weary me out."
"Zena, what is it, my darling? You've been listening," cried Maria Alexandrovna, gazing intently and anxiously at her daughter.
"Yes, I have. But you need not try to make me ashamed of myself, as you succeeded in doing with that fool. Now listen. I solemnly swear that if you worry and annoy me by making me play various mean and odious parts in this comedy of yours, I swear to you that I will throw up the whole business and put an end to it in a moment. It is quite enough that I have consented to be a party in the main and essence of the base transactions, but I did not know myself. I am poisoned and suffocated with the stench of it."
So saying, she left the room and banged the door after her. Maria Alexandrovna looked fixedly after her for a moment and reflected.
"I must make haste," she cried, rousing herself. "She is the greatest danger and difficulty of all. If these detestable people do not let us alone, instead of acting the town criers all over the place, as I fear they are doing already, all will be lost. She won't stand the worry of it. She'll drop the business altogether. At all hazards, I must get the prince to the country house, and that quickly, too. Oh, I shall be off there at once, first, and bring my fool of a husband up. He shall be made useful for once in his life. Meanwhile, the prince shall have his sleep out, and when he wakes up, I shall be back and ready to cart him away bodily."
She rang the bell.
"Are the horses ready?"
she inquired of the man.
"Yes, madam, long ago," said the latter.
She had ordered the carriage the moment after she had taken the prince upstairs. Maria Alexandrovna dressed hurriedly, and then looked in at Zina's room for a moment before starting, in order to tell her the outlines of her plan of operations,
and at the same time to give Zina a few necessary instructions. But her daughter could not listen to her. She was lying on her bed, with face hidden in the pillows, crying, and was tearing her beautiful hair with her long white hands. Occasionally she trembled violently for a moment, as though a blast of cold had passed through all her veins. Her mother began to speak to her, but Zina did not even raise her head. Having stood over her daughter in a state of bewilderment for some little while, Maria Alexandrovna left the room, and, to make up for lost time, bade the coachman drive like fury as she stepped into the carriage. "I don't quite like Zina having listened," she thought as she rattled away. "I gave Mozgliakov very much the same argument as to herself. She is proud, and may easily have taken offence. Well, the great thing is to be in time with all the arrangements, before people know what I am up to. Good heavens, fancy if my fool of a husband were to be out!" And at the very thought of such a thing, Maria Alexandrovna's rage so overcame her that it was clear her poor husband would fare badly for his sins if he proved to be not at home. She twisted and turned in her place with impatience. The horses almost galloped, with the carriage at their heels.